seen her in person since she was 10 years old. And now she's... oh my God, she's 27. I am horribly old. Despite everything, Enzo runs over to her. He wraps his arms around her, and she hugs him back. He whispers something in her ear, and she smiles and nods. I couldn't make out what he said, although I heard the words, "Your mother." I crossed the room to get a better look at this girl. She might be 27, but she still looks very young. I would believe 20 if somebody tried to convince me. But there is something very shrewd and hard about her blue eyes. She has the eyes of someone 20 years older. Something about her eyes makes me believe that having her on our side might be the best weapon we can have. "Hello, Millie," she says. The last time I heard her voice, it was high and childlike. Now it's crisp and businesslike. She seems like the sort of woman who is working even at the dinner table. I manage a smile. "Hi, Cece. It's really good to see you." "Same." She smooths out the lapel of her suit jacket. I wish it didn't have to be under these circumstances.
"Cecilia is a public defender, so officially we are mortal enemies," Ramirez says. "But I admired her passion when I saw her in action. I ran into her about a year ago at the supermarket when I was picking up that cake you asked me to get for Ada's birthday party, and we got to chatting. When I told her who I was getting the cake for, it turned out she knew you just as well as I did. So when you called me this morning, I gave her a call right away."
"Just as well as I did" is pushing it. We've been friends with Benny for years, and I last saw Cecilia when she was a child. Has she been keeping tabs on us? But if she has, I should be grateful. She's our only hope right now. Benny has been filling me in on all the details while I battled the Long Island Expressway, she says as we return to the living room. "They have been building quite a case against you, Enzo." He winces. "I know. It's terrible. Cecilia, you need to know. I didn't..." Cecilia settles down on the sofa, crossing one of her skinny legs over the other. She places her briefcase on her lap and opens it with a snap. She extracts a yellow legal pad of paper and clicks open her ballpoint pen. Clearly, she does not want to waste time on small talk, which I appreciate right now. "Maybe you didn't kill him," she says. "But they are going after you, hard. I promise you that. I wouldn't be surprised if they've got a search warrant in the works." Enzo sneers. "Let them search. They will find nothing." I don't feel the same way. I have had my home searched by the police before, and it's the largest violation I can imagine. They go through everything. They rip apart your entire life, and they don't put it back. "What will they be looking for?" I ask Cecilia. "A murder weapon," she says without hesitation. "Any traces of Lowell's blood." I think about that bloody t-shirt Enzo was wearing last night. I never ended up finding it. He must have gotten rid of it. Except, if it really was his blood, why would he get rid of the shirt? It wouldn't be incriminating if it was his own blood.
"They won't find that," he says firmly.
"It would help," she says, "if you tell me everything from the beginning." And so he does what she asks. He tells her everything while she quietly jots down notes on her yellow legal pad. He talks about his relationship with Suzette, the things he did to help Martha, and finally, working in the yard yesterday while Jonathan was being murdered.
I did nothing, he insists. Nothing. Why would they think I would kill him?
It's a rhetorical question, but Cecilia seems to be truly considering it. She's clearly grown up to be a very thoughtful young woman. I wonder if Ada will turn out like her. Of course, if her father gets locked up in prison, that's going to mess her up forever.
I'll be honest with you, Enzo, Cecilia finally says. I believe it might have something to do with Dario Fontana.
At the mention of that name, all of the color leaves Enzo's face.
What?
He says. My understanding, Cecilia glances over at Ramirez, who nods,
is that Detective Willard has done some digging into your past, before you came to this country, and that is a name that has come up.
I've never heard the name before in my life. So it's disturbing that the man I have been married to for over a decade has such a violent reaction to it.
Who is Dario Fontana? I ask him. That was a long time ago,
he chokes out. Cecilia's voice is firm, leaving no room for bullshit.
Not that long.
Enzo, I say. He is squeezing his knees so hard that his knuckles are white.
Dario was my sister's husband.
His sister's husband. Okay, now it makes sense that the name upset him so much. Antonia was abused by her husband for many years until he finally ended up killing her. He was also a man with dangerous mobster ties, and when Enzo took his vengeance, he immediately had to leave the country. I can understand why he never wanted to say the man's name. But what I don't understand is why Cecilia has brought him up.
He wasn't just that, Cecilia says. We need to be honest about the situation we're dealing with.
Enzo shoots me a pained look.
Mili, would you leave us for a moment?
Is he joking with me? Does he really think I would leave right now? No way, I say sharply. What is it that you don't want me to know?
Enzo,
Ramirez says,
just tell your wife the truth.
Enzo mumbles something under his breath. There is no way I am leaving this room without finding out what he doesn't want me to know. Enzo, I say again.
Okay, okay.
He clenches his hands into fists.
I worked for him. I worked for Dario Fontana, okay?
My jaw drops. That is a piece of the puzzle I never heard before. Enzo worked for the guy who used to beat up on his sister? Not only that, but from what I understood, the man was a mobster. So, if Enzo worked for him...
I was a kid, he says. I was 16 when I started working for Dario. I didn't know who he really was. By the time I realized...
How many years did you work for him? Cecilia presses him. Enzo looks completely miserable having this conversation.
8 years.
And when you were working for him, what did you do for him? Enzo closes his eyes for a moment, then opens them again.
Please stop. I understand. This is bad. I get it.
What did Enzo do for this mobster?
Okay,
Cecilia concedes. We don't have to talk about this right now, but I need you to see what we are dealing with. If this were to come up in a courtroom,
yes, I understand.
I will fight for you, she says. But I don't want to hear lies, Enzo. I can't do a thing for you if you lie to my face. You have to tell me everything. You have to be completely honest so I can protect you.
He looks her straight in the eyes.
I did not kill Jonathan Lowell. You have my word.
Fine, she says.
But if you didn't, then who did?
Suzette Lowell, I blurt out.
That has been the thought in my head since the moment I saw that dead body lying on the floor. Suzette never seemed to respect or even like her husband. My first instinct was that she finally killed him.
But how? Ramirez asks. That neighbor, she swears Suzette was out all day.
Does she have an alibi? I ask.
No alibi, no. But it's not like this cul-de-sac is walkable. She would have had to come home with her car. It would have been noticeable.
There is another way, Enzo says. Cecilia raises her eyebrows.
I'm listening.
There's a way to park around the back without going through the cul-de-sac, Enzo says. Suzette told me about it. She could have parked in the back, gone in through the back door, and Janice Archer would never have seen her.
And you wouldn't have noticed her?
I was back and forth between our yard and theirs. I wouldn't have necessarily seen her.
Okay, that's a start. Let me look into it.
Cecilia looks down at her watch.
All right, I've got a busy afternoon, so I have to run. This is not going to be a walk in the park, but I promise I'll do everything in my power to keep them from pinning this on you. I'll fight for you.
Enzo frowns at her as she rises to her feet.
When did little Cecilia Winchester learn to walk in such high heels?
You have had cases like this before, and won, he asks.
To her credit, Cecilia artfully dodges the question.
We are going to win this one.
I hope she's right.
51.
After Cecilia and Ramirez leave, we have 30 minutes until the kids get off the school bus. 30 minutes to weasel the truth out of my husband.
Enzo, I say, we need to talk.
He bows his head.
Mili, I am so tired. We need to talk right this minute.
Yes, we do. I fold my arms across my chest. I am not about to let him off the hook this time.
We have been married for 11 years, and all of a sudden, it feels like there's quite a lot I don't know about you.
I have told you everything important.
And you get to decide what's important? He stumbles back to the living room and collapses onto the sofa.
What? Do you need to know every detail? Everything I did from the day I was born?
I follow him back to the sofa and sit down beside him.
No, but if you were some mobster's henchman, yes, that is something worth disclosing.
I was not henchman.
So, what sort of work did you do for this guy?
Nothing. Errands.
I give him a look.
Errands? You mean, like you fed his cat when he was out of town and picked up his dry cleaning? Is that what Cecilia was talking about?
What do you want me to say?
He sits up straight, but won't look at me.
I was just a kid, and I made a terrible mistake working for an awful person. I wanted out,
But then he was dating my sister, and it was not so easy to get out. And then he married her. And then what could I do?
So what did you do for him? I ask.
Did you go after people who owed him money and break their kneecaps?
He snorts.
You watch too many movies. Nobody breaks kneecaps. That is ridiculous.
Gee, I didn't realize you were so knowledgeable, I retort.
Merely.
Okay, so nobody breaks kneecaps. What's better? What do you break when you want to get some deadbeat to pay back a loan, huh?
He's quiet for a long time, looking down at his lap. Finally, in a low voice, he says,
Fingers.
Oh, my God.
Milly,
he raises his eyes.
I am not proud of this. Believe me, it is all my fault that Antonia is dead. If I hadn't started working for Dario when I was a stupid kid, she never would have married him. She would still be alive.
His Adam's apple bobs.
I have to live with that. It eats at me every day. That's why, when anyone else needs help, I must.
I have to bite my tongue to keep from saying the terrible thought going through my head. That if he was shaking people down and breaking their fingers, or worse, maybe this is karma coming back to bite him.
Tell me, I say. Did you ever kill anyone for him?
No, never. I have said that to you.
Well, you said a lot of things that turned out not to be true.
He flashes me a wounded expression.
I was only trying to protect you.
Bullshit. He concealed so much of his past, and I can't believe I'm only finding it all out now. He had so many opportunities to tell me the truth, and he knows everything about my past, which isn't exactly idyllic. I have plenty of skeletons in my own closet. He could have been honest. He could have told me everything. He chose not to.
I never killed anyone.
His voice breaks.
I would. Never. I did not kill Jonathan.
I look into his eyes. The first time I met him, I couldn't believe how dark they were. It sent a chill down my spine. But then, years later, when we stood together in the courthouse, vowing to love each other until death did us part, I looked into those same eyes and felt nothing but love. For this man. I trusted him. He was going to be the father of my child, and I knew with all my heart that he would take care of us. He would do everything in his power to protect us. I'm not sure how it all went wrong, because I feel more and more certain that Enzo has been lying all along.
52. After everyone is in bed for the night, I decide to slip into the Lowells' backyard with a flashlight. I wait until after the kids are asleep. Enzo looks like he's asleep as well. I have no idea how he was able to drift off with everything that happened today, but when I looked down at him on his side of the bed, his eyes were closed. And he was snoring softly. I don't bother to get dressed because I'm just going into the backyard next door. I put on a pair of pajama pants and stuff my feet into a pair of slippers. That should be good enough. The entire front of 12 Locust is cordoned off by police tape, and the inside of the house is dark. Suzette has clearly found another place to stay that isn't stained with her husband's blood. There were a handful of reporters milling about, but Enzo and I stayed inside, and they eventually got bored and left. I called my work and told them that I would need a couple of days off, and they have been very understanding. Enzo claims there is a way to get into the backyard without parking in front of the house. I want to believe he is right, because if he isn't, he is the only one who could have killed Jonathan Lowell. And I want so badly to believe that he didn't do it. The Lowell's backyard is enormous compared with ours. You would think that if our house really used to be for the animals, we would at least have a giant backyard, but it pales in comparison to our neighbors. The grass has been neatly trimmed, courtesy of my husband, and he has planted and shaped shrubbery along the periphery of the yard. He has also sectioned off an area that Suzette apparently wanted to reserve to start a garden. It is exactly as he said it would be. I shine my flashlight around the edges of the yard. I checked a map before I came over, but it was not very revealing. There are plenty of things that exist in real life that might not show up on a map, even a virtual one. That's why I'm here, to look around myself. I keep my flashlight trained on the shrubs. Enzo did a great job with them. Every single one is perfectly trimmed, without a stray leaf or branch. He is so skillful. Even without Suzette, he would have been able to build his business here. He didn't need her. What if what the detective said is true? What if Enzo and Suzette conspired to kill Jonathan and had an agreement to split the life insurance payment? No. I can't imagine my husband agreeing to something like that. Enzo is willing to bend the law sometimes, but he'd never kill someone for money. But I also can't imagine him breaking someone's fingers. Enzo has been stressed about the mortgage payments. They are, admittedly, suffocatingly high. We wanted this house so badly, so it was hard to admit that it was a bit out of our price range. He desperately wanted to give his family a nice home in a great neighborhood. But no, he would not have killed to get us that. I don't believe it. I can't. When I reach the far end of the yard, I hear a sound, a rustling of leaves. I shine my beam in the direction of the sound, and some of the branches move of their own accord. The shadows shift and bend. It occurs to me that if somebody did come in through the back to kill Jonathan Lowell, they still have access. And here I am, in my pajamas and fuzzy slippers, wandering around the backyard with no weapon whatsoever to defend myself besides my own two hands. For a second, I imagine Enzo coming into the backyard next door tomorrow morning and finding me with my throat slashed, lying in a pool of blood. "Hello," I whisper, aiming the beam of the light squarely at the rustling leaves. I consider making a run for it. Our own backyard is only a stone's throw away. After all, Nico was able to hit his baseball into this yard from our own and break a window. If I turn off the flashlight, whoever it is won't be able to see me anymore. Unless they have a flashlight of their own. My heart races as I debate what I should do next, and as I stand there, frozen, I realize I have waited too long. The intruder is here. 53. I take a step back, trying to decide if I should shut the flashlight beam off. Is it better to have the element of surprise, or is it better to see who I'm dealing with? Before I can decide, a figure steps into the backyard, and my shoulders relax. Suzette, I say. Suzette Lowell is dressed as casually as I have ever seen her, in jeans and a light cardigan. She looks me up and down in my pajamas, my hair pulled back in a messy ponytail, clutching the flashlight for dear life. She laughs, although it's not a happy laugh.
What are you doing in my backyard, Millie?
She demands to know. I hike up my pajama pants. I heard a noise. She lifts an eyebrow. It's a weak excuse, and she knows it.
Don't you think your family has done enough to me?
I tighten my grip on the flashlight until my fingers hurt. We haven't done anything.
Seriously?
The shadows cast dark circles under her eyes.
Your husband murdered my husband last night.
That's not true, I say, even though I have my private doubts.
Are you kidding me?
She says.
Janice saw him enter the house. He was there when Jonathan was killed. Are you really telling me he didn't do it? Why would he do something like that?
I am curious to hear Suzette's answer because everything I have heard so far involves some sort of conspiracy between her and Enzo. But clearly, Suzette would deny something like that because she wouldn't admit to being involved.
Millie, she says, I hate to be the one to break it to you, but Enzo was obsessed with me.
Obsessed with you? I repeat incredulously.
Do you think I asked him to come over here every minute?
She shakes her head.
He always had an excuse to be here, always flirting with me, and he was intensely jealous of Jonathan.
This is almost laughable. Enzo wasn't flirting with her. I could see with my own eyes that she was the instigator. At this point, I can tell when a woman is throwing herself at my husband.
After all, she says, you saw the way he was all over me at the beach. Do you think I wanted him to practically carry me back to the car? I couldn't get him away from me.
It didn't look like you minded, I comment.
Well, I did, she sniffs. And he told me he wasn't happy. He said he felt trapped into getting married because you were pregnant.
What? Her words finally hit home. Because it's absolutely true. Enzo married me because I was pregnant with Ada. Yes, we had been living together, but there was little talk of marriage. Okay, there was no talk of marriage. I certainly never mentioned to Suzette that Enzo and I got married because I was knocked up. That means he must have told her.
Why would he say that to her? Unless, I'm sorry you have to hear it from me, she says, but your husband is a dangerous man.
She cocks her head to the side.
But maybe you already know.
A sudden cool breeze sends a shiver through me. There's nothing to know. Enzo wouldn't hurt a fly. She laughs.
Oh, Millie, I'm sure you don't really believe that.
I do believe it. My husband has never done anything violent to another person during the time I have known him. Threatened it, maybe. But I've never even seen him throw a punch. Although there's a small chance he may have broken some fingers. Oh yeah, and he did once almost beat a man to death. Anyway, Suzette steps out of the beam of the flashlight. I need to get some stuff from the house without the paparazzi catching wind of me. I figured I'd slip in through the back. The reporters are all gone. Really?
She frowns, clearly disappointed by the lack of attention from the press. Whether Suzette killed Jonathan or not, she does not seem terribly broken up about his death. It's like she doesn't even care. And talking to her has not helped matters. But I have found out one very important thing tonight. There absolutely is a way for somebody to get into the back of the house without Janice Archer seeing them from across the street.
54. The next morning, we are woken up by the doorbell ringing downstairs and red and blue lights flashing outside the house. I shake Enzo awake, and he is instantly alert and joins me at the window.
"What this time?" he mutters.
Is there a chance that the detective has come to arrest my husband? I can't even wrap my head around that possibility. I throw on jeans and a t-shirt, and I race downstairs in my bare feet, practically tripping on the stairs. I haven't even showered yet or brushed my teeth, and my hair is greasy. But you can't exactly tell the police waiting at your front door to give you a few minutes to pop in the shower. When I crack open the door, a sober-faced Willard is standing on our front porch, dressed in a crisp white shirt, his tie cinched close to his neck.
"Mrs. Accardi," he says.
How can I help you?"
"I got a search warrant here."
Cecilia mentioned this as a strong possibility, but it still shocks me that they're here. It's been 2 days since Jonathan Lowell was murdered, and it seems like there should be other, more realistic suspects by now. The fact that they are still looking at Enzo scares me. "Can I wake up the kids first, please?" I ask.
"We can start downstairs,"
he offers. That is the best I can hope for. When I get upstairs, Enzo has managed to throw on jeans and a t-shirt. He can hear the officers entering our house, and his face fills with concern.
"They are searching. Now!"
I nod. "This will take a while. You stay here, and I'm going to drive the kids to school." The kids are understandably a bit frightened and confused about what is happening. I tell them to get dressed, and I run to take a quick shower and brush my teeth. It's way too early for school, so maybe I'll take them to a diner for some breakfast. I don't want to be here while this is happening anyway. When I get out of the bathroom, both the kids are dressed and look like they're ready to go. They are both in Nico's bedroom, wearing identical worried expressions on their faces. Enzo is in there with them, sitting on Nico's bed and talking to them softly. I hang back for a moment, listening to the conversation.
"Daddy?"
Ada whimpers.
"Why are they searching our house? What are they looking for?"
"I don't know," Enzo answers. "But they are not going to find anything interesting. So we will let them finish, then this will be over."
"Are you in trouble?"
she presses him.
"No."
His voice is firm.
"Not at all."
Then he speaks to the two of them in Italian, which they both understand, but I do not. I don't know what he says, but whatever it is, he manages to coax a small smile out of Ada. Nico, on the other hand, just has a troubled look on his face. "All right," I clap my hands together. "Who wants to go out for chocolate chip pancakes?" There was a point in time when Nico would have sold his Nintendo for chocolate chip pancakes. But now, they just stare at me, utterly unenthusiastic about the possibility of eating chocolate for breakfast. Before I can get them out of the house, Enzo grabs me. He leans in close to me and whispers in my ear,
"Do not worry. This will all be over soon."
I wish I could believe him. The kids barely talk on the way to the diner, and even though we do get the obligatory chocolate chip pancakes, they both just stare at the little brown circles and push them listlessly around their plates. Ada has bags under her eyes, and Nico has some dry drool in the corner of his lips. "Do you want more syrup?" I ask them. I lift up the container of maple syrup, ready to douse both of their plates in it, if that's what it will take to get them to eat.
"Mom," Ada says, "do the police think Dad killed Mr. Lowell?"
"No," I say quickly.
"Then why are they searching our house?"
Nico asks. "Well," I say, "they are searching to prove that he didn't kill Mr. Lowell."
"That makes no sense," Ada says.
Nico nods in agreement.
"Okay, fine."
It was so much easier when they were little and accepted everything I said. Oh, wait, that never used to happen. "Here's the thing. We all know that your dad would never hurt anyone. Not unless he had to protect us, right?" I'm proud of how quickly they both nod their heads.
"So it doesn't matter if they're searching our house," I say, "because your dad didn't do anything wrong, so there's no way they're going to find anything."
As I say the words, I try my hardest to believe them. If I let my doubts seep into my voice, the children will hear it, and I need them to believe that their father is innocent right now. "Everything is going to be okay," I tell them. But even as the words leave my mouth, I know that they are not true, and that things are about to get much worse.
55. After I drop the kids off at school, I make a stop on the way home. Partly because I don't want to come home in the middle of the search, and partly because there is something I need to know. Something that is tugging at me, and I won't be able to stop thinking about it until I make this pit stop. I find the address I'm looking for in my inbox. It's located about two towns over, in a neighborhood where Enzo and I looked at houses. We found a beautiful house that was closer to being within our price range than where we ended up, but the neighborhood was terrible. At least it's safe here during the day. Mostly. I park in front of a weather-worn white house that looks like it is badly in need of a paint job. I climb out of my car, debating if it's safe to leave it on the street. It's okay, though. I won't be long. I walk toward the front steps of the house, looking around for some sort of guard dog racing out at me. This somehow looks like the sort of house that would have a terrifying dog guarding it, and possibly a man with a sawed-off shotgun. Well, I would still rather be here than back at my house with the police. I march up the steps to the front door. I press my finger against the doorbell, but I'm fairly sure it's broken. So instead, I rap my fist against the door. When there's no answer, I knock harder. There's a Pinto in the driveway, so I assume somebody is home. Finally, I hear footsteps growing louder behind the door. A scratchy voice calls out,
Okay, okay, hold your horses.
A second later, the door is yanked open by a man in his 60s. He's got sparse white hair and veins of spider webbing around his bulbous nose. Even though it's early in the morning, he stinks of whiskey. Hello, I offer a smile. I'm looking for... Is Martha here? The man narrows his bloodshot eyes at me.
How do you know my wife?
For a moment, I allow myself to imagine the proper, efficient woman I came to know in my house being married to this man. It doesn't seem like a good fit, but I've learned that people change a lot after they say I do. What was it like for her to go home to this man every night? I can't help but feel a rush of sympathy for the woman I accused of stealing from me. Although, to be fair, she did steal from me. She used to clean my house. I silently curse myself for not having a story ready. She left her coat behind, and I wanted to return it to her. Never mind that I'm not actually carrying a coat. I'm counting on the fact that this guy is too blitzed to notice. I just want to talk to Martha so I can confirm Enzo's story. I need to know if he was telling the truth.
You may as well keep the coat, the man says, because that bitch took off on me earlier this week. After all I did for her.
He lets out a hacking cough, and I take a step back.
You mean she moved out?
Well, do you see her anywhere? He grunts. If you see her, you tell her she's got some groveling to do when she drags herself back here.
For Martha's sake, wherever Enzo took her, I hope she never does drag herself back here. I hope she's gone for good. The man slams the door in my face, and I walk back to my car, which miraculously has not been stolen in the 2 minutes I was away from it. But this time, my step is a little lighter. I hadn't been entirely convinced of Enzo's story about Martha, but now it looks like it all checks out. If he showed up here, he would have been concerned. And if she answered the door with bruises on her face, he would not have been able to walk away without trying to help her. Because he couldn't help his sister in time, and it's eaten at him for the last 2 decades. His desire to help women in danger is something I always loved about him, and a passion I shared. I want to trust him. I want to trust my husband so badly. 56. The police search our house for hours. When they finish, the house is in shambles. As expected. Neither of us are working today. I've taken a personal day, and Enzo is trusting his work to his staff. So, we get to cleaning it all up. I'm just hoping we can get it done before the school bus delivers the kids back home. If they walk into this mess, they will panic. Enzo and I clean together in silence. We're working on the kitchen now, putting away pots and pans that were thrown on the kitchen floor. It's almost like unpacking our boxes all over again. Even though I shouldn't say it, there's a question running through my head, and before I can stop myself, I blurt it out. Enzo, did you tell Suzette that you only married me because I was pregnant? His body goes rigid. What? Did you tell her you knocked me up?
No, I did not say that to her.
He rubs his jaw.
Why would you think I would tell her that?
Because she knew about it. And I sure didn't tell her. So, How did she know?
Ada is 11. We are married less than 12 years.
He lifts a shoulder.
She did math?
Maybe. It's entirely possible I might have mentioned that we were married 11 years. I should have been more careful about what I said around somebody like Suzette. She was surely analyzing every word. He narrows his eyes at me.
When were you talking to Suzette about this?
I can't very well tell him that I snuck into their backyard last night. He would be furious. This was a while ago. I just started thinking about it.
Believe me, Millie, I do not say our business to anyone.
He frowns at the kitchen counter.
They broke 3 plates. You know that.
I told you they were not going to be gentle.
This is allowed. They just break things.
I don't know what to say. What are we supposed to do? Call the cops on them? Do you know if they found anything? I ask him.
No, they did not find anything because there is nothing to find.
He clenches his fist in frustration.
They broke a mug, too. It's ridiculous.
Enzo, I say, why don't you let me finish up in the kitchen? You can go clean up the bedrooms, okay?
Fine, he grumbles.
He stalks off, leaving me alone to clean the kitchen. Good thing, because I'm pretty sure there's a lot more that they broke in here. There are fewer things to break in the bedrooms. While I am throwing away the remains of the broken dishes, my phone rings. It's a 718 number, which means it's not somebody on the island. I take the call.
Millie?
It's Cecilia's voice. I recognize it from yesterday. I still can't get over how different she sounds from the little girl she used to be. Hi, Cecilia, I say. I guess you heard what happened.
Yes, I spoke to Enzo this morning. He wasn't happy.
We were just surprised, I say. We were hoping it wouldn't come to this, that they would find another suspect.
Oh no, Cecilia says. They are laser-focused on Enzo right now.
Did you check out the backyard at the Lowell house? I ask her. I looked around and there is definitely a place where you can get in without passing the front of the house.
Yes, I was able to confirm that, but it might be a moot point.
What do you mean?
I mean, when they were searching your house, they found something.
What? Enzo was so emphatic that nothing would be found that would incriminate him. My stomach sinks.
What did they find?
I don't know, she sighs. They are being incredibly difficult about sharing any information at this time, but I was able to ascertain that from one of my contacts. They are doing some tests right now, but my contact said they think it's a slam dunk.
A slam dunk?
Oh my God. What if they found that bloody shirt? Enzo swore it was his own blood, but if they say it's a slam dunk?
Does Enzo know this? I ask.
Yes, I just got off the phone with him, but I wanted to let you know as well because it didn't sound like he was going to tell you.
She hesitates.
This is all in confidence, of course. I'm not supposed to know this information at all, and I'm certainly not supposed to tell either of you.
Can I trust you to keep this between us, Millie?
You can, I confirm.
Benito and I both have our ears to the ground.
Despite the fact that my world is crashing around me, Cecilia doesn't sound the slightest bit rattled, and her confidence makes me calmer.
If we hear anything at all about an arrest warrant,
I'll call you immediately. The idea of my husband being arrested is almost too horrible for words. Suddenly, I'm too choked up to even respond. Millie, Cecilia's voice is firm. We are going to figure this out. I promise you that. Do you believe me?
But, I manage. What if... I can't even complete the sentence. Anyway, I don't know what I'm going to say next. What if my husband really was having an affair with Suzette Lowell? What if Enzo really killed Jonathan Lowell? What if they lock him up? What the hell am I going to do? What will I tell our children?
Millie, Cecilia says in that confident, capable voice of hers, you need to trust me on this, because I trust you. I trust Enzo. We will get through this.
Okay, I agree. I trust you. Except, how exactly will we get through this? If they found that shirt covered in Jonathan's blood, Enzo is in deep trouble. I have to hope that he got rid of that shirt, that he put it somewhere they'll never find it. It doesn't even occur to me that they have found something far worse.
57. I don't mention my conversation with Cecilia to Enzo. The truth is, I'm scared to talk to him about it. When he comes to the kitchen to help me set the table, I open my mouth a dozen times, but the words never come out. Something terrible is coming, and it almost feels like talking about it will make it real. When the kids get home, we act like everything is normal. We act like our home didn't just get torn apart by police officers looking for evidence of murder. If there's a chance he's going to get arrested soon, it's all the more reason to cling to normal while we still can. Enzo even manages to coax Nico out into the backyard for some baseball, the first time since the Little League incident. But Enzo spends much longer on the bedtime routine than usual. I was going to let him go first, but when he's already been in with Ada for half an hour, I decide to go in to say goodnight to Nico. It's late enough that he might drift off soon if I don't go in there. But when I get into Nico's bedroom, he doesn't look like he's about to drift off anytime soon. He is sitting up in bed, reading a comic book. The enclosure where little Kiwi used to reside is still by his bed, but of course, now it's empty. Bedtime. I tug the comic book out of his hands and lay it down on his desk. Time to go to sleep.
I'm not tired.
I bet you're more tired than you think.
I bet I'm not.
But he obediently puts his head on the pillow. I turn off the lights, but the moonlight is still streaming through the window by his bed. Even though we have shades, he usually keeps them up. The whites of his eyes almost seem to be glowing in the moonlight.
Mom, he says.
I perch myself at the edge of his bed.
Yes?
Do you think that if a person does a bad thing, that makes them a bad person?
Well, what kind of bad thing?
His eyes grow larger.
A really bad thing.
He must be thinking about his father. It must have been so jarring for him to wake up this morning to the police in our house. What will he think if they arrest Enzo? He is watching me, waiting for my answer. After everything I have been through in my own life, I have a unique perspective on this. I have done some bad things. Some really bad things. I have killed somebody. Actually, more than one somebody. Nico doesn't know about that, though. We have kept that secret from our children. One of these days, they will almost certainly find out. And I am terrified that when it happens, they will hate me. I think, I say, that a person can do bad things and still be a good person, as long as they were doing the bad thing for the right reason. You can do bad things for a good reason? Absolutely. Like, we both know lying is wrong, right? He nods. Well, what if Ada got a haircut and it looked bad? And she asked you how it looked, and you told her it looked pretty because you didn't want to hurt her feelings. That would be lying, but it would be for a good reason. Does that make sense? Yes. Does that answer your question? Not really, he says, because lying about a haircut isn't something really bad. A chill runs down my spine. Well, what sort of thing do you have in mind? Where were you all those times you swore you were with Spencer Archer? I watch my son's face, waiting to see what he's going to say, but he just shrugs. Whatever he's done, he's not talking. Before I can probe further, there's a knock at the door. It's Enzo, ready to take his turn saying goodnight. I'm still not sure what Nico was asking about. It seems like he has something very specific in mind, but it doesn't look like he's going to tell me what it is. Maybe Enzo will answer his questions better than I can. 58. It's a rare thing that all four of us are gathered around the breakfast table. Since the kids didn't eat their pancakes yesterday, I am making chocolate chip pancakes again today. It's nothing amazing. I am using the pancake batter that comes from the grocery store, where all I have to do is add water and mix. Then I pour little circles into the frying pan with lots of oil. I use way too much oil for my pancakes. I am basically deep frying them. But the kids love it. Actually, Enzo does too. And then, my final touch is the chocolate chips. I put about 8 or 9 chips in each pancake. I try to make the chocolate chips look like happy faces. It is only partially successful.
Smells good, Mealy, Enzo says.
His voice sounds cheerful, but he must be at least a little panicked inside after what Cecilia told him yesterday. Finally, I lay out 4 heaping plates of pancakes on the table.